Here I am, Clay Schmitz. I'm here with Paul.
Yes.
At his amazing Dow Center. I just want to start with how we met, because I found that, okay. Like, I was like, oh, I love when synchronicities line up.
Yeah.
And I had been going to that Kava bar.
Right.
For a few years, maybe more. You know, and I just like the vibe. It's fun to hang out.
Right.
And occasionally, I just decided, for whatever reason, to check their events calendar. And I'm like, oh, there's like a breathwork meditation. That's like, that's up my alley. Let me, you know, two birds, one stone. Why don't I go? So I go, and there's you and Manish. And I'm like, like, man, I love it. We're like, we hit it off. We both got the martial arts thing, the healing arts thing. We're like, we like Kava. It was like, I'm like, I love it when, the universe just like brings people together in like ways I never would have found you, you know, if I tried, but when I just let it go, flow,
it's true.
Happens. And so, that was, I really love that.
Yeah, me too. I'm grateful for those synergies or serendipities.
It's for like, sure.
Okay, these two humans on a parallel path, you know, finally in this space-time happened to be Kava Bar on that evening where I did that alchemy. It's like, okay, their paths need to cross at that time. And
right.
Then here we are.
I always thought it'd be a cool idea for a movie to like show how many times we got within like 10 feet of each other.
Right,
you know, like, who knows? You know, like if you had that kind
at the
of
farmer's
ability.
Market, but you were facing that way and I was facing the other way.
You know, it's like that blows my mind. Or just, it reaffirms my faith and there's something beyond us, you know, whether it's orchestrating or helping or guiding, but there's something.
Yeah, because there's, you know, 8 billion of us, right? Like, you're only going to meet so many of that. 8 billion Homo sapiens in your life, and right?
And yeah,
so the chances of actually meeting are very, very low,
right?
If you calculate it, but then if you're meant to meet, you meet.
Like the heaven and earth, the mountains, the rivers will part.
Yes.
Whatever, like it'll happen. You know, it's beautiful that way.
Mm.
And so, why don't you introduce yourself and let us know what you do in this amazing center here? It's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. So, I struggled for a while, and even, you know, my older sister, who has known me my whole life, right, for decades, a few years ago, she, you know, she wants to refer people to see me, but she's like, hey bro, what exactly do you do? So I was laughing like that, and so one way I describe it is that I'm sitting at the hub, the center of a wheel. This place happens to be called Dow Center, right? And depending on the audience, right? And here we have your amazing audience, who I'm facing, I just rotate, I just pivot. You know, if I'm talking to martial artists, then, you know, I use the martial lexicon. You know, if I'm talking to medical people, right? And is it more like Chinese medical people or is it more Western medical people? Then I pivot using their jargon, right, their vocabulary. If I'm talking to more spiritual people, more et cetera, you get the idea, right? Or if I'm in a particular culture, I try to adjust. And so it's kind of like being multilingual, right? If you only speak English, then okay, you know, everything has to come through that channel, that filter. But imagine if you speak French and Chinese and Spanish and Portuguese, then you're able to say things in more nuance or higher resolution that English doesn't afford, right? And so when I kind of was trying to come up with a concise way to describe how I situate or how I identify, that center of the wheel, that empty center, that hub, connects to, like in a car, right, an axis, right, axle, axis, that in my tradition we call the Tao, which literally means the way, right? And you mentioned heaven and earth, and so that's a good dialectical pair. Say, okay, heaven above, earth below, right? And then ideally they relate. So there's a way that, you know, we bring heaven to earth, right? And also maybe also kind of pray and bring our energies upwards too. Mm-hmm. So that's the Tao. It's a two-way. It's a two-way street. And each person connects to that, you know, mystery, you know, or that ineffable, or sometimes I like to say they F the ineffable, right, in their own unique way. And that gives you like a center, right, a personal center that connects to a sort of universal, unconditional, let's say. And then the spokes of the wheel represent the different arts, right? It could be martial art, could be medical art, healing art, spiritual art, you know, musical art or fine art, right? And art basically as a modality of expressing one's essence. And then the rim of the wheel is kind of where you interface with the external world, right? Mm-hmm. And to continue the wheel metaphor a little bit more, it's like a lot of students or clients or patients come to me when they smell a burning smell, right? And that's where their, you know, the rubber of their wheel hits their road of their life. And maybe it's a lot of stop and go, or like moving too fast, doing too much, and then that's called burnout, right? Mm. And that's that burning smell. And then, so basically, when, you know, just like us, like we happen to meet, you know, as the universe sort of provides, then I try to turn them, right, to towards the center. Oh my God, it's not just an outward facing, you know, identity, roles, responsibilities. They also have an inner self, if you want to call it that, that they've, no one has ever taught them to connect to, right? Mm-hmm. The center of their essence. Like, if you go a little bit deeper, it's like answering perhaps this question, like, why did you come here, right? And so I think that essence is at the center. You can look at a lot of examples, like, you know, you can look at me, I can look at you, as sort of role models, right? Or anti-role models.
Like, tormentors.
Oh, yeah, like, oh, that's a great role model of what not to be, how I don't want to be, right? So basically, my primary, right, modalities are arts. One is, so actually to summarize it, so Tao Arts Center, right? So for me, as in my first person cultivation, to stay connected, right, to the greater and the deeper, perhaps, the higher, the mystery above and the majesty below, in my version, in my way of self-mastery, and then finding ways to not just be like, oh, I'm so cool in my cave, you know, on the mountaintop, but find ways to express from there as, you can say, service, right, or some kind of art. And so one, I call it Tao acupuncture, right? From my connection to Tao, I use the modality of acupuncture to tune the energy of the body, right? Body, mind, right? I also use martial arts, right? Stay connected to my Tao, but I use martial arts to play, right? In terms of, and now here's another way, another layer is like playing with dualities, right? So for acupuncture, it's addressing the duality of like hot and cold, health and illness, right? If you're too hot, cool you off, right? If you're too cold, warm you up, right? So being able to dance to dualities using acupuncture to toggle between illness and wellness, right? And I'll say martial arts, then it's also playing with duality, right? Maybe, let's say, hard and soft, fast and slow. But that context is not for self-healing. That context is for self-protection, mm-hmm. right? If someone is attacking you from, you know, this direction, right? How do you meet them with your speed, your force, your structure, right? In order to maintain your, it's a kind of health too, right? Your, in this case, maybe more your survival to keep balanced. And then, you know, there's other modalities that I offer. I also use an ancient modality called Tao astrology, Chinese astrology. Mm. And that is to map out and adjust the energy of time, right? So if acupuncture is sort of the energy of the body, and martial arts too, but in a more, you know, antisocial or asocial, you know, violent context, then astrology is adjusting the energy of time as it flows through your, you know, energy body, let's say. And then there's even other modalities that some people have heard of, is like geomancy, but it's like feng shui, adjusting the energy of space. Mm-hmm. And here you're in my space, so I use some of those principles, right, to say, okay, this space is too dark, this space is too light, so the energy flows well within the space, right? And then other modalities like music as a modality, right, to also tune using maybe the pair of like loud and quiet, right, or movement and stillness. And I also do commissions for like calligraphy and wood carving. And so short version of that is I add my own kind of essence into the calligraphy brush with my breath, with my presence. And usually I write or carve Chinese characters, each one of which is a complete sort of mythopoetic story, right? Like, because Chinese characters are sort of like pictographic, So they carry both like phonetic as well as semantic meaning. So I try to infuse that into the Tao art piece. And sometimes I do it at some events and they say, okay, what do you want to bring into your life? Okay, well, yeah, I'm struggling with my kids. You know, they're a little bit rowdy. So can you write like tranquility for me? So, okay, qing jing, you know, and really have that intention, yeah, like a talisman almost, right? Ah. And then they hang it in their space, you know. So at the very least, like when they walk by it, they're like, oh, okay, it's a reminder to.
It's like a silent mantra. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's just there, you know, like put it wherever you may cross paths with it the most, not in the back of the door, but maybe in the bathroom, I don't know, bathroom mirror, or right? So you get that reminder, like you said, silent mantra, it's great. You know, there's an energetic transmission to that. So yeah, that's kind of the general. It's like dancing, you know, the alchemy of opposites, because that's life, right? Day and night, you know, inhale and exhale, summer and winter. And that kind of, those waves of life, it's kind of, to use like a surfing analogy, right? Like, you know, even the smallest wave knocks you over, right? Versus with skill, like even, you know, 10-foot, 20-foot wave, you can like not just survive, but enjoy the ride.
Big difference.
Yeah, and then, you know, I draw from my tradition. You know, I grew up, I was born in Taiwan. Spent a lot of time in the West, and also actually had an opportunity to move back to Taiwan as a young teenager. And then later on in my life, I had the opportunity to share some of these ways of Taoing, you know, or systematizing or balancing in about 20 countries before COVID. I had the opportunity, mainly because my late teacher passed away, so I was one of the people that kind of helped fill his shoes, mm-hmm. and that brought me to 20 different countries.
Wow.
To try to transmit these principles, right, through translators, right, in Greek, Portuguese, Spanish, like, Can you try say that again? Yeah, because I don't see the people nodding. Oh, okay.
Something got lost in translation.
Yeah, lost in translation. So I had to refine and hone like what I'm trying to communicate to you and your audience in many different cultural contexts, which was challenging but fun. On hindsight, I really enjoy it. I have like a lot of flashbacks to the times traveling in different landscapes and cultures. Mm. Yeah.
When I discover the truth, I want to shout it from the rooftops. That's why I wrote 3 books, Unlearning to Remember, The Flying Lyris, and Breakup is the Beginning. Available on Amazon, on my website, on Spotify, you can get the audiobook, and on Audible, you can also get the audiobook. We've been told a bunch of nonsense, a pack of lies, and they're not innocent lies like the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus or something like this. No, these are drink this poison, it's good for you kind of lies. So these people are nasty, and we need to do something different. So let's wake up together. Help me, support me in this mission to educate everyone around me. And even though my family arrogantly fights me in learning this, once we learn the truth, it's only good. It only helps. It only improves our lives. I mean, how can not taking poison and learning how to help ourselves and take care of ourselves and take care of our kids, how can that possibly harm? That can only do good. Learning how to take care of this earth and how to build community, come back together, how to steward this place. This is only good stuff. This can only help. So I wrote The Flying Lyris for the kids. It's a story about, we're told that a new boogeyman is on the scene and only the potion from the rulers can save us. Where have we heard that story? Unlearning to Remember, that was when I woke up after my first divorce and learned about community and about how this place used to be and our ancestral ways and how much better this place can be if we know how to take care of each other. And then Breakup is the Beginning. It's all about my divorces and my losses and how they truly were the beginning. That's what originally woke me up. It was in that desperation that I was tired and done and ready to ask for help and willing to do whatever to build a better life. And I have, and it's amazing. And so get them on my website at clayonland.com or Amazon or Audible or Spotify. Thanks so much for your support.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like, I mean, to pick up on the wheel circle kind of analogy, you can meet people where they're at, and
yeah.
with enough variety in your craft, you can speak a language that's more likely for them to understand or be able to, you know, like if you speak the martial arts language to somebody who's not
like,
ready
whoa.
For that, they might not get it.
Right.
And medical to Eastern people, they might mm-hmm. be like, what is this guy talking about?
Exactly.
And so it's, and then like you said, when the language fails us, it does get lost, and then it's a challenge to actually
the
get
challenge.
The words through.
Yeah.
And so then it's practice, like how do we say it a different way, kind of a thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks for reflecting that back, yeah.
Yeah, and so I would love to hear, and how we get there is fine, but any stories of your art and practice and what people have come to you with, maybe a problem, and then how you resolved it, and especially, you know, the more amazing, you know, by, at least by, you know, Western standards, they tend to not believe in miracles, but with enough skill, you're like, no, this is just how things work, and of course you're going to heal. This is, the body is amazing, and so, yeah, I would love to hear anything you got in that area.
I'm flashing to some of those trips besides teaching in different countries. Say we did like 8 hour Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right? In, let's say, in Lisbon. Right? And then on Monday, we would have maybe one day off, and then Tuesday we would fly to maybe Oslo and then set up on Wednesday and do the same thing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right? And then have a day off and then maybe fly to, you know, like Athens, etc., even to Santiago and to Auckland, New Zealand, all these places. And so I say that because I started to have a lot of deja vu in terms of like stories, right? Mm-hmm. Like during, you know, on Saturday we would have happy hour with the students, and so someone would say, you know, often through a translator, "Hey, Dr. Wong, can I ask you something?" It's like, "No, it's happy hour, you know, ask during class, you know." Mm-hmm. But okay, all right, what's your thing? Yeah. And then they would say something related to partner or health or money or, you know, some kind of like love, you know, kind of thing. And then I would try to, you know, hear them and then kind of give my, you know, if they want, you know, my perspective. And then a week later, you know, I'm in Sao Paulo, very similar deja vu, like different person, maybe, you know, different gender, different ethnicity, different language, but I'm like, wait, I just heard the same story, you know, like, you know, 2,000 miles away. And the interesting thing is then I started to feel like we were all the same person, maybe capital P person, just living different lives, you know, and learning the Earth school curriculum. Let's say there's 26 modules, A through Z. Some people starting from Z going to A. some people starting from A to Z, you know. So some have mastered, say, Z, you know, X, Y, but they don't even know that there's a curriculum CBA yet, and then vice versa, you know. So who's more advanced than another, right? And some are just jumping around, you know. And some of those modules are, yeah, like how to be healthy on this planet, you know, and how to receive love and how to express love. And so I started to like have this kind of one interesting. I started to feel more at home wherever I was, regardless of my story or the other people's stories. I started to feel like just a kinship, like as a human being on this planet, you know, in this embodiment. I think there are just that handful of things that we kind of experience slightly. You know, it's like a variation. It's like you're cooking chicken. It's still chicken, but some countries they cook it as curry. Some as you know, fried chicken, some as boiled, but it's still chicken, right? But each of us kind of have a different flavor or spice it a little bit differently. So in other words, I focus on the chicken, so to speak. And I have my way of cooking it, but I enjoy tasting all the other ways, right? And for all you, if you're vegetarian, you can think tofu or whatever. So I was struck when I was an undergrad here at Berkeley, at UC Berkeley, when I kind of had a falling out with Western medicine path, and one of my classmates initiated, in Berkeley you can do a student initiated course if there's not that offering, at least back in the day, called DECAL, Democratic Education at Cal. And so you just need to come up with a syllabus and get faculty sponsorship. So she did that, and she created integrative medicine course. And in one of those weeks, she invited, you know, homeopathy practitioner, next week a chiropractor, a massage therapist. When the Chinese medicine and acupuncture person came, they said something in the very beginning of the lecture, like Western medicine focuses on disease, treating disease, right, to say it nicely, and with a sort of more machine model or even military model, like cut and get rid and attack. Whereas Chinese medicine and all traditional natural medicines focus on enhancing the health. So one focus on illness, one focus on wellness. And the metaphor for the latter is either like a garden or a forest or like a jungle, right? Where it's an ecosystem. And it's not about like cutting and burning and attacking. It's about nourishing, right? And so I say that because that's how I approach when we're talking about, say, specific cases. I don't really focus on the symptom or the problem or the disease. Of course, I'm not blind, you know. Like I see that they show me the reports. Okay, they have this blood work, or they have this particular, whatever it is, you know, whatever diagnosis it is. But I think the practitioner's gaze, if you will, it's kind of like namaste, right? Like, which means, as I understand it, the divine in me, you know, acknowledges the divine in you, right? And the prerequisite is that you're connected to your divinity. And then you're able to then either, you know, reflect or project that and see that deeply into someone else. So it's a wellness vision. It's like a holy vision. And some clients come to me with like 10, 12, their laundry list of things. Really? You know, I got constipation, got frozen shoulder, I got you know, erectile dysfunction, I got insomnia, I got migraine. I'm like, oh wow. Right? The whole thing, yeah. Each of which is to me a golden alarm, if you will, to say it that way. Yeah. It's actually their, you know, mental, emotional, physical system functioning properly in response to the stressor, excess stressor, right? Too much stress input, that then is giving them these warnings, if you will, right? Called, let's say, maybe at first it's just kind of a, you feel off, you don't even know what it is, right? And then if you ignore that and the stress is still incoming, it becomes tension, let's say, you know, tension in your shoulder. You ignore that, you don't change, the stress is still coming, it becomes like an ache, yeah? And then becomes limited range of motion. And then it becomes, let's say, more severe burning pain, right? And each step that you ignore this kind of golden alarm, like your body's not trying to hurt you. Like pain is not trying to hurt you, it's trying to help you. But we're taught in this culture to numb and ignore, right? So it's like, blah, 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 I don't hear. And then body's like, okay, you know, maybe your heart is talking to your liver and like, hey, how's it going up there? Or how's it going? It's like, not good. Like, you know, like we try to give them, you know, high blood sugar, they're ignoring it. You know, okay, how about high blood pressure? Okay, let's try it to see if that wakes them up, you know. It's like, finally they talk to the brain, say, I think we need to give them a stroke, you know, to shut them down. And then it's like, okay, we give them a chance. We gave them 3 years, you know, like step by step. It's like, yellow alert, which is like beep, beep, right? Orange alert, beep, beep, beep. Red alert is like, right? And they're so good at ignoring. So, you know, finally we just got to shut down. And even the shutdown is not trying to like just mess with you and hurt you. It's actually trying to save you, right? Make you rest, but you're not resting, okay? So we're going to force rest, right? So that's kind of the way I see it. Like I see like none of these as malfunctions, like these so-called symptoms, yeah. They're actually, body's trying to help you in that wisdom that you mentioned, right? This millennia, if not, you know, millions of years old inheritance of life, you know, and Homo sapiens in this form about, what, 200 to 300,000 years in this form. So I think that in terms of what do I mean by biological wisdom and intelligence, from Chinese medicine, which is rooted in sort of Taoist natural philosophy, is basically alignment to that yin and yang, that duality of the seasons, right? Including the yin and yang of the day, which is like brighter day and darker nights, right? And then also in terms of the four seasons, etc. There's other cycles, you know, 10-year cycles, etc. 60-year cycles. And to the extent that we can attune, you know, or let's say first step is to become aware of disconnection from those cycles. And then like, yeah, wow, I didn't realize like, you know, I go to sleep at, you know, like 1 a.m. and that's a problem. Like maybe it is a problem, right? You become aware of that. And then the next step is like you make adjustments. Okay, let me try sleeping earlier. But sleeping earlier requires that I don't eat so late, right? And being able to fall asleep at night is contingent on morning sunlight exposure, right? Mm-hmm. All these things, like, oh my God, everything is connected, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's actually usually that conversation I just had, or that mantra, the brighter days, darker nights, is usually included in the first consultation of all my clients, right? Nowadays, right? And it's not completely new. It's, you know, even when I was an undergrad, like decades ago, but I would say the last 10, 15 years, and especially the last 5 years, and again, this is a translation thing, right? Is getting more popular in the form called circadian biology, right? Biological rhythms. That's getting more popular and people are more aware of that. So just as an example, like here in a kind of college town area, there are young women, like freshmen, sophomores, you know what, like 18, 19, 20, who have irregular, if not missing, menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. Crazy, right? Mm-hmm. Like they should be, you know, like their fertility should really be, you know, on point.
Yeah, just like the moon every month.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, right? Ideally, right? Yeah. And so sometimes I do that. I say, okay, and I tell them that story, like, okay, for many generations, right, women's body, and we also live together, right, village and mm-hmm. tribe, like, most of the women actually they synced up, right? Maybe through the hormones or pheromones, and also to the full moon. Some women they actually ovulate full moon, some it's new moon, but and that's like just to give them like an image of like an optimal norm, right? Because mm-hmm. the problem with this modern culture is normalization of pathology. Mm-hmm. Like if you don't have period pain, that's weird, right? If you don't have, you know, like, you know, if you don't get cancer or, you know, polycystic ovarian syndrome, though, that's the exception, you know, like, whereas just a couple generations ago, like, if they had cancer in medical school, you know, and they were like, everyone's like, oh my God, look at this, so rare, you know. Mm. And so, like, what do you call it, distortion or disruption or dysfunction, like, we've gone, like, many generations, and it started actually centuries ago, if not millennia ago, like, more indoor life, and more mm-hmm. sort of, like, stationary versus, like we call them nomads or whatever, right? Like hunter gatherers moving with the seasons, right? Instead of like just parking in place and surviving off the grain silo, right? And so like some of these, it's several cases, right? Because I've been in practice for several decades, but let's say, so what is your lifestyle? I'm trying to get like triggers or variables of circadian disruption. They live in the dorm with two other roommates in one room, okay? in eight stories where they're like being fried with
EMF.
All the spectrum, both visible and invisible, right? The lights are on all the time, right? And then, yeah, you know, back in my day, like it was hard to find one Wi-Fi network, you know? And
yeah. Now there's 100.
Now you it's like, right? And so 24/7. And then, you know, midterm after midterm, you know, like, and then like eating cafeteria food and super late. And so I'm like, okay. And so just to get them aware, first step, like, okay, that's a problem. Oh, I don't know, yeah. And then say, okay, what can we do? So then I call it home play because everyone is overworked. So I don't give homework, home play. So your home play this week is, okay, based on what you told me, okay, you have a morning class, great. Instead of, you know, taking an Uber you know, from the dorm. And often it's because it's contingent on how they sleep. They didn't sleep well. So they wake up, you know, at last minute and they have to take an Uber, you know, 5 minute Uber rather than, let's say, a 20 minute walk, right? Mm-hmm. I say, I'm not expecting every day, but at least 3 days this next week, can you try to wake up earlier enough where you can walk to school in the beautiful morning sunlight mm-hmm. and get it, and, you know, don't wear sunglasses. Try to wear a short sleeve or tank top and get that morning light sunlight exposure, right? During the yang part of the day, you should get the yang energy, right? And then the first week that they come back, oh, some spotting. Actually, they hadn't had a period in like 3 or 4 months. Like, oh, something, right?
Say,
so, okay, good, keep that going. There's like maybe 10 levers, right? We pulled one lever, right? Keep that up. Don't go back to Uber, you know? And then maybe, when do you eat dinner? Oh yeah, about 10, 10:30, just because this semester I have all these classes, like, ooh, like that will affect your sleep, right? And ideally, actually, and this is in Ayurveda too, like you want to tap into the, you know, the fire of the day. And if you can, try to finish dinner by sunset. Like, this time of year is okay because sunset's around 8 o'clock, right? So she was able to do that, right? And a little aside, like from the Western medical thing, is that if you eat in full spectrum sunlight, outdoors versus indoors, like say you eat a donut, right? Your blood sugar is gonna spike, right? Let's say from whatever, you know, 60 to 80 or 90. If you are eating that same donut outside versus indoors, your blood sugar still spikes, but 30% less. Wow. That's crazy, right? And blood sugar basically means it's like sugar high, right? In other words, like when you're outdoors, that full spectrum sunlight allows that sugar that's in your blood to be absorbed into your liver more quickly, right? Basically glucose into glycogen, which is the stored form of that sugar. And it's amazing, right? And then especially if you have a diagnosis of, you know, high blood sugar leading to pre-diabetes to diabetes. So anyway, so then she committed to that because she saw improvement. And so she started to eat instead of at 10 o'clock. It was a struggle, right, to 9 o'clock and to 8 o'clock and also less, right? And also if possible, you know, like foods that are less heavy too, qualitatively. And then when she came back to me the next time, it was 2 weeks because she had a family visit. Like she started to get like those premenstrual symptoms that she hadn't had for so many months, right? So it's actually again, this amenorrhea, right, seems like, wow, such a young person. But again, it's the body's wisdom. Because we know like women who do ultra marathons, right? Like running, like training for like 100 miles, their period also shuts down. Because the stimulus that you're giving it is that we're basically like a refugee, like escaping a war. Like,
danger,
so,
danger.
Yeah, so like there's no point to invest energy in the reproductive system. It's not viable, right? All the energy needs to go to the periphery to survive, right? And so it sounds so simple, but even like, you know, I don't know if they still have it in there, like back in the day, like even like the CDC said that like 70-80% of diseases are caused by stress, you know? So I don't know if they changed that, but and it sounds so simplistic, but that pretty much is it. And then to remove the stressors, right? And also to do things to de-stress. And then I think I added like one more thing with this client. And I was also doing acupuncture to, while she was here, to give her some of that yin medicine. What I mean by yin medicine, stillness, quiet, darkness, right? Being like soft and relaxed. Because her whole life was yin deficient, right? Go, 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 do, EMF, right? Like noise, all that. And so I would say even the culture is yin deficient, right? Yang excess, go, 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 do, right? Which gets us into do-do. So while she was here, like simulating, like some people call this place a refuge, right? So that means I'm like, okay, interesting. Like multiple people have said that, see? So that means you're telling me like, you're a refugee, right? Of modern life. And so you're barely surviving. You come here and you have a refuge, at least temporarily, to actually be, literally just simply just be, right? Leave everything outside of the treatment room. If you're gonna do one thing, the only thing I'm gonna allow you to do is breathe, okay? and kind of log off, or you know, close the thinking app, the feeling app, and the doing app, and just like, just being, breathing, that's it. Which is hard for people. Sometimes it takes people like multiple, you know, treatments or weeks before they're able to like taste that depth of being. Which I think if you tie to what we said earlier, is where the meaning of why they are came to be, right, actually embodied, the meaning is there, right? A lot of people are, I think, living stories that are not meaningful to them. So one more thing about yin is also darkness, right? So brighter days, darker nights. So I told her to get blackout curtains and to communicate to her roommates. Actually, I think eventually after about a month or two, she actually requested a new room that only had one roommate instead of two, right? That makes a huge difference. And I told her, if she can find a room where it's like maybe the end of the hallway or something that's darker, you know, and so she did that, and then her period started to regulate. Yeah, wow. So I saw her for like maybe 6 months, and then by the last couple of months, it was monthly again, and even starting to sync with the moon. Yeah, perfect. So that's one that's like pretty, I think, common, but using that as an example because the hormones are so sensitive, like a female body is so sensitive to the moon. I mean, it's incredible, right? Like Wi-Fi connection to lunar energy.
Right?
And then I could share more, like for one thing, but before I do, I just want to check in with you. But like when I was teaching around the world, because we gave so much knowledge and information, like some of the attendees, like I remember there was one in Australia, Melbourne. He's like, "Dr. Wong, this is so amazing. Like, can I come visit your clinic, you know, to intern?" I said, "Actually, I had to shut down my clinic because I was traveling all over. And so I referred all my patients out." So I talked to my colleagues, and then we were like, "Actually, let's start a humanitarian organization." So we started an acupuncture humanitarian organization where we would go into different, you know, less privileged communities. For instance, in Philippines or in Cambodia or in Haiti, where we would go in and set up an acupuncture clinic and to treat people. And there are also some very interesting cases, and then bring our students, right? So they get to see, instead of maybe in their clinic, maybe they get to treat frozen shoulder, like, you know, let's say 5 times a week, they have a frozen shoulder case. But if you go on medical mission and we're seeing 120 patients a day to 200 patients a day, maybe they see like 20 frozen shoulders in the morning, all right? So they gain a lot of confidence.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a win for our interns. It's a win for the community, right? Because a lot of these places, they don't actually have regular healthcare. Mm-hmm. Maybe some sick care, but not true healthcare. And then it's good for us too, because that was our mission, you know, for our late teacher to try to promote his acupuncture healing system. So I'll preface with that. There's some interesting cases from that context too. But should I share one more short?
I'll just recap what I heard.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Make sure we're on the same page.
Yeah, sure.
I put everything I've learned into my courses. They're on my website. How to feel better, how to communicate better, how to relate better. If I feel better, I can do the other two. And often when people say something that upsets me or triggers me or something happens or just life in general, first thing I do is turn to feel better, whether it's breath work or meditation or mindfulness, watching my thoughts or doing something physical like exercise or the cold or hot or whatever it is, but a whole list of amazing tools that I had no idea, and I used to suffer a lot when I didn't have them. And then once I can calm myself, well, then I can communicate better. I can catch myself before I say something hurtful, or I can learn how to ask for what I need, or I can learn how to communicate with the people around me so I'm more likely to get my needs met. And this helps immensely in all my relationships. I can be the one, I am the one who's the healthy one, who's the one that knows how to relate and relates in a healthy way. I'm not the one who's the rageaholic or the maniac who's destroying the relationship and constantly doing the toxic, dysfunctional behavior. And so if we have these skills, we can all be that one. And then this whole toxic living, toxic relating, toxic communicating can fall by the wayside because we don't have to do it anymore because we've learned a better way. And this system that we're in here, they don't want us to know a better way. They don't want us coming back together. They don't want us feeling better because then we're not going to buy their stuff. They need us poor and sick and fat and unhealthy in order to do all that. Whereas if we feel better and we're able to communicate better and relate better, we don't need them. We can build a better world where we steward and take care of this place and each other. And everyone benefits, even the supposed powers that be. They will benefit by joining our communities. But we have to first say no to them and learn how to empower ourselves, reclaim our power. So I put that all into my courses. Come on my websites, Clay Schmitz and clayisland.com. Both of them, it's all there. Sign up today or come do a one-on-one person and let's get going. Let's help each other feel better, communicate better, and relate better. Thank you so much.
Yeah, to continue your like we started with the car mechanistic analogy, and it seems like, you know, the check engine light comes on.
Yeah.
And you know, none of us would think of taking a hammer and smashing the light or even putting tape over it. We just know, like, you go get the problem fixed. Like, you don't make the light go away.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to our bodies, we're often taught, here, take this pill, make the signal go away.
Yeah.
Don't look any deeper. Don't assume that your body is friendly like you said, it's a militaristic kind of model of like my body's broken or some invaders attacking me.
Yeah.
And we need to go to war, you know, you know, like if your garden was struggling, like step one isn't set the whole thing on fire or drop a bomb on it. You know, like it's a little TLC, you know, maybe a little more listening, more watching, like tuning in, like what does this need? Listening.
Yes.
And so that's incredible that, you know, our society is telling these women in this case to go, go, go. The body feels like it's highly competitive survival.
Yeah.
Have to study. I can't sleep. I can't take any breaks. I got to hurry up and get this degree. I got to go. And then the body is saying, this isn't safe to procreate. This isn't even safe to function.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts shutting things down.
Yes.
And it's a normal, healthy,
brilliant,
wise response to an unhealthy environment.
And
so
that's it.
That's the big thing about, you said, awareness, like bringing people back to like, no, your body is supposed to respond this way.
Yeah.
If it didn't, then we'd have a problem, but your body is so wise. So, and then, you know, you have to give them a prescription because our culture is so hectic to actually chill. Just you can take a break. You don't have to bring your laptop into the treatment center. You can actually, and so that's incredible. And you know, it seems so simple. Oh, you know, all you did was do this, and it. But if we understand, that's the big thing. You know, understanding what the body is doing and why and how we're meant to function, and so incredible. And so if you have something, you know, more, let's say, serious or, you know, like that people might consider life-threatening or anything around there. Like people often say, oh, you can't heal that with herbs. My dad said to me before he poisoned his body to death with chemo and all that, said, oh, there's some things you just can't cure with tea or herbs. And so I would love to be able to bring awareness and illuminate that there are things you can do, that the body is totally capable and nature has all we need.
It is simple. And simple is over here and easy is over here. As like a novice, as a beginner, like simple and easy are antonyms, right? What's actually easy in this culture is to make things very complicated. Like just sitting there, you know, and overthinking, you can make something, you know, seemingly, you know, simple, very complicated, right? So it's very easy to do that, right? But with remembrance, with awareness, with repetition, right, with guidance, right, then gradually these simple principles, you can actually apply them in a more and more easeful way. So simple becomes easy, but you have to earn that along the path of like self-mastery. And unfortunately, in this culture, like we have a lot of olders but less elders, meaning like by elder, the simple equation is like older plus wisdom equals elder, you know? And elder minus wisdom is an older. So, and to cultivate that wisdom is cultural remembrance, but there's been so much cultural dismembrance, if not sort of spiritual amnesia, even things like spiritual atrophy or spiritual amputation, these kind of more medical terms, basically disconnection from living lineages. And so I see people waking up to the importance of whatever you want to call it, you know, tapping into your natural wisdom or biological intelligence, but it's kind of like pieces here and there. Whereas like some of the lineages that I've connected to are contiguous for 2,000 years, 3,000 years. So it's not just like one biohack and another biohack. It's actually systemized. Like even let's say herbs, right? Instead of like, oh, ginkgo biloba is great. Let's pop ginkgo biloba. It's good for, you know, cerebral circulation. Traditionally, like herbs are used in a formula, right? Because ginkgo biloba is great, maybe for circulation, but it has another effect that's not so beneficial for this particular client. So you need like a second or third herb to complement. And then this client, it's another, you know, second or third herb to complement. So it's very customized. And so, yeah, it's a pity. It's a pity. And even, you know, like say in with Chinese medicine, there was the whole cultural revolution, you know, where tens of millions of people died and a lot of these masters were sent to the countryside. You know, this is a very tragic history. So some of the lineages were lost. Some escaped to go to Indonesia or Hong Kong or Taiwan or even to the States. That have this remembrance of what we're talking about, the simplicity of wellness contingent on like remembrance. And so I think that maybe it's like the whole like Judeo-Christian thing of like original sin, you know, like we're bad. But just to play with that a little bit, like, I mean, you know, this is, that's part of the cultural background operating, cultural operating system, right? Like, but sometimes I like to play as a wordsmith or like a mythopoet, mythopoetic practitioner. It's like the word sin is interesting because it means without, right? Sin, like, I don't want onions, sin onion. Like, so to me, like, if you think of original sin, like, yeah, okay, I can play with that. It doesn't mean like you're a bad person. It just means that you're disconnected. You're without remembrance of spirit and nature, right? You're trying to do it like cowboy style on your own personal energy, right? You're not plugging into, you know, a spiritual, natural, and communal. Actually, I think that's actually really huge too. That's why, you know, I'm trying to create like a culture or a community or subculture. I call it like a probiotic subculture within the dominant antibiotic, which means against life, right? In Chinese medicine, there's a tradition of yang shen, which literally means yang means nourish, shen means life, where there's a community of people who are living like more this ecosystem model, like everything we talked about before. And so, like, yeah, I have many cases, like, because I started in, I think, 2000, actually. So it's been, as in Chinese medicine, and even started teaching more in the somato-psychic context of martial practice in 1997, so coming up on 3 decades. So seeing, like, actually that's interesting too, like sometimes it was like my martial arts students who actually had health issues they never told me about, including like stage 3, stage 4, whatever these, that through the martial, you know, spoke of the wheel, they tapped into something, you know, like, they felt the power, and that power literally empowered them because they felt disempowered, like, oh, wow, I am something, right? Or they started to, and I started to see them lose weight. You know, it's like, why am I training self-defense if I hate myself, right? Just kill me, right? like,
right? So it's like, sad if you, but true.
If you hate your life and you hate your relationships and, you know, like, and you even have thoughts of suicidality, like, you know, it doesn't make sense to train self-defense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just do me the favor. Just like, you know. So it's kind of funny in a way. But then through, yeah, inadvertently, I just thought of it because you're also a martial artist. It's like, wow, you learn, like, you feel like your stability, right? You feel like your power. Like, wow, you feel like you wake up that ferality, you know, that life force energy. And then you're like, huh. And then I see the transformation over, like, weeks and months. Like, oh, hey, wow, it looks like they lost weight. And then I see them, you know, like, seeing like they're eating better. You know, sometimes we go out to eat and like they're not eating the, you know, the crappy food they're trying to order. And so and that's the power of, like, I would say I have like 3 sort of transpersonal fields of influence that I think are vital to not just get healthy but stay healthy. And what I'm talking about here is what I call the holy culture, a culture of wholeness, basically, not like holier than thou, where actually you have a culture where you're cultivating with others in such a way that you're enhancing kind of your power, you're actualizing your potential. And that actually is really necessary for accountability too, right? Instead of just trying to do it based on your own, I guess, your cowboy mentality, like, I don't need anyone, like, I'm a rock, I can. So these are what I'm actually summarizing. I could give you specific cases, but what I'm summarizing here in this part of our conversation is that you could say 3 or 4. Like, if it's 3, then it's like a trinity model, right? Rather than just rely on, like, say you have a portable battery, right? And this is whatever milliamps or whatever. Like, this is your constitution. You were born with this, right? But if you're tapping yourself, you know, in a burnout culture, right? I've noticed, like, issues that I saw in 60-year-olds, I start to see in 50-year-olds. Issues I saw in 50-year-olds, I see in 40. And like I said about amenorrhea, like, issues that I used to see in 60-year-old women, I started to see in teenagers, right? Mm-hmm. Because since age whatever, they've just been draining themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're just relying on this without ever, you know, recharging it, then based on your constitution, you're gonna burn out or die, right? Like, at a certain age, right? So there's 3 things that, regardless if you have whatever illness, right? Like, even the more scary ones, like, you know, post-stroke or heart disease or whatever it is, all those things in the diagnostic manual. I've only seen people get better if they dare to reconnect, right? First, you can say it's to themselves, okay? So that's the first thing, connect to yourself, right? And then based on that, then connect to as much as possible. Some it's 1 out of 3, some it's 2 out of 3, some it's 3 out of 3. These sort of metapersonal or transpersonal fields of influence which can recharge your battery, right? One, I call it divine spirit. So something greater than just the day-to-day mundane is really important, actually. So that's one sort of variable, right? And some call it the mystery, some call it God, some call it, you know, whatever, Holy Father, whatever. But something greater, like in the spiritual sense, and that can maybe just confer purpose, right, and perspective. And then also, that's great, to enhance that kind of spontaneous healing or recovery, a second variable, which is connection to sacred nature, right? We can call it Mother Earth, right? We can call it, you know, the feminine, the yin, right? Or nature as sacred, right? Start to go hiking. Or like I said, start to go outside even, you know? Start to go camping or whatever, you know? Develop some relationship with land, right? That's also, I think, not just an antidote, but a catalyst for healing. And then the third one is what I actually already talked about, connecting to like a holy culture, not the profane or the sick culture that by definition, if you're well adjusted to a sick culture, that means you're sick, right? And so connecting to, you know, sub-communities, subcultures, which are actually trying to practice actually, you know, connection to spirit and nature, right, and themselves. That's so important, actually. And without that, I think maybe nowadays that actually may be the most important, actually, in my opinion. And then, yeah, like, you know, as an example, because it's scary, like, and like legally, right, in California with the as a licensed acupuncturist, we can't say that we, you know, treat cancer per se. So I don't say that I treat cancer. That's a legal thing. But definitely I've treated patients who have cancer, maybe I can say it like that, you know, or have gone through, you know, or are going through, right? There are 12 rounds of chemotherapy, right? And then they come with their prognosis, right? They have like, you know, 3 months. They have like 3 months in their prognosis. And, you know, 3 years later.
3 months to live. And
yeah, 3 years later. Right. Through the acupuncture, through the herbs, through the maybe Qigong practices, you know, or through just some of these, like, they're memes. Like, meme is coined by Richard Dawkins, I think, in his book Selfish Gene, 1979 or 81, which is, a meme is a unit of information transmitted culturally or verbally, right? Almost like a meme is like a unit that creates the currency of a story, right? Or story is a currency of culture, and they're composed of memes. Just like a gene is a unit of biological information transmitted, you know, like through sex, right? But that takes nine months, right? And there's no guarantee that you know, it's a successful transmission. But as a memetic engineer, like, you can say something, hopefully, like, you know, like maybe something that we've shared here or said here can go into someone's memetic system and so-called, you know, sometimes they brainwash them, like change their mindset, right? Mm-hmm. To wake them, like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that, right? And they could change their life in that moment and have a pretty drastic change, right? In the next weeks and months. It doesn't even take the 9 months of like a biological genetic transmission. And so sometimes I joke, I'm a brainwasher. Because a lot of people are like, their mental, you know, container is like saturated with a lot of bullshit. Mm-hmm. That is antibiotic, you know, like, you know, and I'm using
it's
that as a metaphor.
Good. Yeah,
and that's also literally the case, right? Overprescription of antibiotics, but it's also a metaphor, like it means literally against life, against your life, you know. And so I try to rinse out, maybe using Qigong or some kind of alchemical practice to try to first detox from all this like shit that they've carried maybe intergenerationally, right? Mm-hmm. From their parents didn't know. They just took it for granted with their grandparents, and then, right? And they're doing a lot of things that are against their life, but they don't realize it. Try to first clear out some of these ideas, make them question, and then offer like a mimetic buffet. Like, you don't have to eat everything I put out here, but maybe you like that, you know, wheel and hub model. You know, maybe you like the whole simple is not easy thing. You know, maybe you like the idea of home play. Maybe you like the idea of like, yeah, maybe I should try to get some morning sunlight, right? Just take one thing, you know, that maybe kind of can resonate with you. Maybe 90% doesn't resonate, but try like 10% I can play with. Yeah, go for it. Yeah. And then as you take these memes, right, and run experiments, I sometimes call them alchemical experiments in your life, right? Eating at 10 p.m. versus 8 p.m. Do you think there's a difference, right, in your sleep? And do you think if there is, that sleep quality will affect the other, you know, 16 hours of your life while you're awake? Dare to run these experiments. They have to meet me at least that far. Dare to run these experiments in order to gain evidence, like, oh, he wasn't just bullshitting. He wasn't just like pulling things out of, you know, the Tao. Yeah. Yes, Tao load. So you gain evidence, you know, from these experiments, and eventually, like cumulatively and curated evidence, they take what they're shown and make it their own. Eventually, they gain the expertise, and that's within the path of self-mastery, right? Between the mystery above and the majesty below. And that's each person's responsibility. But imagine a community of badasses who are each like cultivating their self-mastery together. Mm-hmm. That's it, you know? Like, I thought about it for a while, like, maybe I should just leave, become like a hermit.
One of the reasons I'm here is to like, they call it, you know, some people call it a mastermind group.
Yeah, masterclass, mastermind.
You get together with other people who are on the same, you know, up-leveling kind of thing.
We need to do that.
It has a cumulative, like, geometric effect or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more than the sum of the parts kind of a thing.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
Yeah, that's incredible. And
so it's just like some distillation of things that I've, you know, observed. Like, I've received what I received from my teachers, you know, and maybe 12 different lineages that I'm grateful that I was able to, again, like meet, right? Universe said, you need to meet this person who gives you this puzzle piece. And then I play with it. Maybe I draw on it a little bit and then try to piece it together. Like sometimes like people say, okay, what is it that you do? Sometimes I use the term Taoology. Taoology is kind of in my generation, in my personal integral systematization of everything I've received, right? From the martial tradition, the medical, the mystical, the spiritual, the natural. And Taoology is a systematization based on distillation of the common principles from all these different teachers and lineages. Mm-hmm. Because I found out like they argue about 80% of the stuff, you know, like it's a cross. No, it's a yin yang sign, you know, no, you know, like the absolute is, you know, like the Buddhist, you know, wheel or swastika, whatever symbol, right? They argue about the symbol and the doctrinal. But at essence, like 20% I found is in common. So I try to focus on distilling what is that functional essence, some call it first principles, right, of whatever cultural system that I've been lucky to encounter, whether it's like from Tibetan Buddhism or to like, you know, like Lakota, you know, like medicine or, yeah, whatever, shamanism, that, yes, all these beautiful like spices, right, and colors are in variation,
make a tasty meal.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. Wow, I love shamanism because of this. I love, you know, like Sufism because of that. Yeah,
and it's like the holistic thing that like we've been, like you said, brainwashed to be like, oh, my eye hurts. I need to go to an ophthalmologist. I can't go to somebody who like treats the whole thing.
And then while you're there,
it's only my eye. It's not connected to anything.
While you're there,
else.
It's like, hey, doc, I have my big toe. I got this.
You got to go to the toe guy. You know, and it's like, and yeah. So it, a lot of it is overcoming the bad programming that we've been subjected to.
It's
more for the profit of the industry or the thing, and not for the benefit of the human, or especially as a community as a whole. About like, you know, like if we're all healthy, if we're all feeding each other a good way, we're all coming together in a good way, and especially that mastermind mastery, you know, martial arts is all about mastering oneself, from being able to wear every hat on the spectrum from killer to healer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not just supposed to beat the shit out of people. You got to put them back together too.
Exactly.
And control, you know, like just because you can hurt people doesn't mean you should, or just because you have a surgeon has a scalpel doesn't mean you just go cutting the organs out left and right, you know, like there's a holistic way and everything has a purpose.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I think Paul Cech said, the idea that, that to really heal somebody, if you don't have purpose as the baseline or some kind of why am I here, then why should I eat good? Why should I work out? Yes. Why should I, you know, there's no juice. There's no even reason to live or heal or even do any kind of hard work or discipline. And so you fall into one bad habit after another. And next thing, you know, so it's a downward spiral.
That's huge.
Whereas if you find something that lights a fire under that person, then all that other things will kind of just fall in my natural because they have something to get up for. They have something to get excited about. Yeah. They're like, I have a reason. I have something to do and I need to be healthy to do it. And it's a wonderful way to be instead of that cut, burn, poison thing.
Yeah, I think what you just identified is fundamental. Like, you know, whether you call it like a meaning crisis, some call it that, or some traditions call it like the practice is to identify the most needful thing, like in this life. Like, I do these 99 things in this life, but on my deathbed, like, shit, I didn't get to that one. Like, what is that? You know, if all else fails, like I did that one thing, you can call it, you know, soul's purpose or whatever. And then sometimes like a way to think about it is like, you know, like we can survive depending on how much like storage you have in your, you know, fat stores, like you can survive without food for like weeks or months, right? Depending on your fat deposits, let's say. And then you can survive without right on cue water, you know, for a matter of days. Like I think the longest I've done like a dry fast is like five, six days, right? I didn't push it further than that, like, but, and then so from, you know, survive with food for weeks, months, survive without water for days, and then the next is the breath, right? Survive without breath for, you know, whatever the record now is, 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, right? But to survive without meaning, right? Mm. Once you lose that, right? Like, okay, no food, no water, no breath, right? You can survive for a while, right? But without meaning, actually, when you get to that state, it's like, we talked about suicidality, like, what's the point? I might as well not breathe. I might as well not drink. I might as well not eat, you know? And so this is kind of more kind of a thought experiment, but, or you can look at people like Man's Search for Meaning, like Viktor Frankl, right? In the concentration camps, talked about like, in those most dire of conditions, right? You can still find something meaningful. Right, like most of us, even in this kind of playground, you know, digital playground of, you know, like sometimes I, you know, think about like either social media friends or followers or like, you know, online dating. Like I think about like with my, you know, my nephew and niece's age, like, wow, like maybe they're actually waking up to some things, but like the illusion, the falsity of quantity over quality, like, wow, I can just scroll all day. I never did it, but like, you know, like swiping, like, oh wow, there's 5,000, you know, sexy people or whatever. But they don't have really any friend that they actually, you know, or they don't have the capacity to just meet someone, you know, at the cafe or something like that, you know. And so it's like, wow, such atrophy of like what I think were like the ways that gave us like meaning by default. Sometimes I think about like, okay, we have all these like breath work and meditation workshops, like, and that are great and meaningful in this culture. We need it. Or even sometimes I think about like talking about virtue and ethics, right? But to me, that's already a huge degeneration. It's like, I think in like a healthy, this is a bit romanticizing, but let's say like if we lived in connection to spirit and nature and with each other, in a natural way, we wouldn't actually have to do meditation or breath work, especially as a separate thing. Like, okay, guys, I'm gonna go do my meditation. Like, what? Like, in a way, you know, that which we're trying to regain with like more formal practices of meditation and breath work, and even like psychedelic, right, was actually the default. You know, those like altered like states.
The best example is the gym. Like,
Days,
nobody went to a fucking
I'm gonna
gym.
Go to the gym. Like,
life was a workout.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So it's really funny. Yeah, like, you know, or meaning. Like, I didn't have to like even like psychotherapy industry, or like I didn't have to go search for meaning. Like, you know, like, and it's true. Like, I think there were spiritual technologies in like an intact, like a holistic society, like rites of passage, right, which are really important. You know, like, from, okay, you're a girl, okay, and, you know, often tied to, like what we said earlier, you know, your menstruation. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a commentary, like, you know, like when your menstruation naturally syncs with the moon, right, initiates and syncs with the moon, right, there's whole rituals, okay, now you're a woman, right? Mm-hmm. And for the boys, it was like some kind of rite of passage to become like a protector or provider by surviving some kind of like vision quest, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, okay, there's 12 boys in the village who are ripe, send them out, maybe two of them don't make it back, you know? And so there was real like test, real rich, real kind of risk. But it meant something. Now you're a man, you know, maybe, and you got some kind of acknowledgement from the culture. But modern culture is like, there's not kind of delineation of like that wheel of life even. You know, we're all kind of, to use that metaphor, we're just spinning our wheels, like, you know, like a lot of olders that aren't elders, you know, and a lot of young people trying to figure out like how to navigate this crazy,
like, right? Our workouts were on a treadmill and a bike going nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, you know, and then whereas before it's like, okay, time to hunt, you know, and you would go for like 5 days, you know, walk like 200 miles. Yeah. Yeah. And then like to add, you know, just to mention that in this conversation, like it's like with like the onset of like AI and like data centers and all these things, like, wow, like really, like it was hard like 10, 20 years ago to try to get people to remember. And even as a martial arts teacher, like I've noticed like coordination mm-hmm. has gone down. Mm-hmm. Like back in the day, it was like when I started teaching in the mid 90s, like, okay, all right, here's right hand, left arm, we can do this, and then this, and then people were like, okay, you know. But now like they don't even, they're
the
like,
baseline has shifted.
Yeah, they have very low interoception, mm-hmm. yeah, or proprioception. Like it's like, okay, this is your left hand. This is your,
you know. too much of the video game.
Yeah, yeah, like that part of the you know, the brain, like devoted to your thumb, is like huge. Yeah, but other functions like walking or, you know, climbing is like, has atrophied, you know. It's like, yeah,
sadly true.
Yeah, I really see like our Homo sapiens species like diverging towards subspecies. And this is borrowed from Arthur Haynes and Daniel Vitalis, where they talk about Homo sapiens subspecies domestical fragilis.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I first heard that, I was like, yeah, spot on, right? Like, fragile because of over-domestication, right? And right. Some of the things, like we said, lack of interoception, lack of connection to nature. And then rewilding, right, is the branching to another subspecies, which is, I think, the minority, but hopefully it will reach a critical mass, is Homo sapiens neo-aboriginalis, right? Whereas, like, I mean, like, if you go to the Amazon, like, they can spot, like, a, you know, a baby spider monkey, you know, like, maybe, like, 100 feet up, you know, like, between some little opening in the branches, and then with their poison dart, like, one out of one, you know, shot from, you know, like, or they can just like, right. Like do like, what do they call it? Endurance hunting, you know, like walk for like 5 days, you know, like mm-hmm. 80 miles a day, you know, mm-hmm. like that, like, and that's normal, you know, so that's, you know, maybe indigenous or aboriginal. And we've gone so far from that natural potential. It's not like we're trying to become superhuman, you know, like even with like breath work or these practices, it's like, we're just trying to become more human, like mm-hmm. as we were, you know, with this kind of, the new aborigine, right? The new kind of indigenous person who's connected to their natural potential actualized. So, yeah, and some call it rewilding, right?
Yeah. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. So that's kind of the lay of the land. I'm sure we could have like 20 conversations, but those are some of the...
Well, I think that's a wonderful start. And we covered a lot of ground, and you set the... kind of the give people a taste of what you do here and what, and even if it's not specific, but just the idea that it's health. It's not to come get a pill or a simple fix or like it's all related, and part of that is coming into right relation, starting with getting into a relation with you, themselves, with their community, with, you know, and part of the, like you're talking about the women not menstruating, well, part of it is maybe children aren't welcome where they're at. And so it's a natural process of the body to say, hey, kids aren't welcome here. Why should we?
Exactly.
So, you know, learning how to welcome and bring back all the things that help not only the individual, but the community, help, you know, it feeds you. Like as an elder or as someone who knows these things, if we don't have people coming to ask, what's the point? Like, I often say, what's the point of having all this wisdom if I got nowhere to go with it?
Bring it to the grave, you know.
Or they say an elder dies, a library disappears, kind of a thing.
So sad, yeah. I've experienced that, you know, like with several of my elders passing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Maybe ways to kind of close this container. So specifically, right, I mentioned like 4 A's. Actually, there's 5 A's, like triple A, you know, come tow your car because you have a broken wheel, right? So my triple A is actually, it used to be 3 main ones. I added 2 more, so it's quadruple A. Dao acupuncture, right, to adjust your energy of your body, right? Body, mind, emotion. And then Dao astrology to say, okay, like just to map out like, I think of actually Tao astrology, not like fortune telling. It's more like, it's something actually very practical to, almost as like a GPS. If there's a high uncertainty in your life that's creating a feeling of insecurity, if you're driving in the area that you recognize, then you don't need to look at the GPS, right? But mm-hmm. if you get into a sketchy part, neighborhood of your life, then it's like, oh, let's pull out the GPS and say, oh, wow, okay, this mm-hmm. is where I'm at, this is where I'm going, this is for this bit of time, mm-hmm. yeah. This is what I'm maybe the thematically meant to learn for this part of my life. Mm-hmm. That's what the Tao astrology is. It's not like, oh, fortune telling. And then I also do Tao alchemy, which is like, you can say Qigong, combination of Qigong and breath work, and even like throw in some martial practices in that. Like, I call it somatopsychic practices, not just like psychosomatic, which is like mind to body, like body to mind, right? Training your body to gain some kind of experience to then shift your mindset. Like, oh, not just doing like abstract visualizations or affirmations. So alchemy is the process of basically actualizing your potential by bridging these first principles, right? Maybe these philosophical principles into your psychology, into your physiology, and ultimately into the, from intra-relationships to inter-relationships with other people. So those are 3, acupuncture, astrology, alchemy. And then I would say also another A is art. So like I said, primarily using guqing, which is this pentatonic ancient instrument with like 3,000 years of history. And it was used actually for healing too, right? Because those pentatonic scale is also mapped onto the internal organs, right? So like, you know,
it's
music
like
as medicine.
Sound bath.
Exactly. Now they call it sound bath, you know. Now they use breath work. It used to be called, you know, qigong or some other.
Yeah. Moving energy. It's not just breath. It's just something stuck or not flowing. And
Exactly. And then, yeah, maybe just to close it off is like maybe this word that maybe a lot of people have heard of is called qi, right? And in different traditions, like they call it ruach, I think, in Hebrew, and then ki in Japanese, or prana, right, in Sanskrit. So as a practitioner, like basically I'm adjusting people's qi, right? First, adjusting my qi, which you can say vital energy or force. I would say, you know, three bullet points. Qi is breath. Right, so even during this conversation, we probably breathed, I'm just going to make up a number, like 500 times, right? Depending on our rate of breathing. How many of those were, how many of those quantity of 500 breaths were at a quality to induce remembrance of wellness, right? And the very basic criteria is like maybe shallow, fast breaths, right? That kind of dissipate our energy, put us into fight or flight or activation of the sympathetic nervous system versus like in low and out slow. That's the mantra I teach even kids, in low, out slow, quality of breath, which actually is rather than catabolic to our energy, it's anabolic. I mean, it keeps our energy resourced and activates the parasympathetic nervous system to rest and digest. So I wasn't trying to deliberately model that, but understanding of our qi as breath. And then also the second connotation of qi is energy. And the simplest is like, okay, how much energy do you have at the end of the day? How much energy, what is your energy budget? Say you have like 100 units of energy when you wake up, assuming you sleep well, right, and have a good circadian biology. Some people spend 80 of it by mid-morning. Right, just burning off the energy, running around with like a chicken with their head cut off. And even if they want to do yoga or qigong or breath work, right? Mm. At the end of the day, it's like, oh damn, I only have like three or minus three left. Oh, yeah. I guess I have the time and the space, but I don't have the qi, the energy to even kind of have a self-investment, right? Return on investment. And that's very much related to the third connotation of qi. So qi as breath, qi quality of breath, qi as quality of energy. You say quantity and quality. And the third is qi as emotion. And so a lot of that, even that example I gave you, like 100 units of qi, and you like splurge 80% of that by 10:30 a.m., often is due to poor emotional awareness, right? Mm. And so one of the practices within alchemy is emotional alchemy. Mm. Like what feelings are actually worth to invest in. Like anger is great, powerful, especially like you talk about in a martial context, like get the, you know, but it's a very expensive emotion. Mm. Do you also have the awareness and the alchemical practices to reel back your emotions and keep your savings account of qi, like replete? And so, yeah, I just wanted to mention that is basically that's the currency that I work at. Qi can become feeling, can become emotion, right? Qi can become a thought, can become a mindset, right? Qi can become a behavior, can become qi can become, let's say, an action and become like a behavior or habit, right? So it's hard to change behavior, mindset, and belief. And so all these modalities that I listed, you know, the four A's or five A's, are basically to get people to the interoception to actually feel their own qi, meaning feel their breath, quality of breath, feel their quality of energy, and feel their quality of emotion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when they do that, and it may take some time, weeks or months, back to the beginning of our conversation, like a lot of those symptoms, even very serious symptoms, start to quiet down. Mm-hmm. Your system is like, oh, okay. He gets it now. we can lower the blood pressure.
False alarm.
yeah. It becomes a false alarm, right? It's like okay. Let's lower the blood pressure, lower the blood sugar. You know, because that's activation, ready for fight or flight, right? Mm-hmm. Your liver releases the glycogen into glucose, ready to. So you have high blood sugar. You know, high blood pressure, high heart rate makes sense in a context where you're in fight or flight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah. All these things are tied together. Yeah. So I'm here at the Tao Center in Albany, California. info@taocenter.com if you have some questions. And so I have personal consultations with any of the above, you know, alchemy, astrology, acupuncture. And once in a while, I may try to do some more, because I have the space, I may try to do like more regular gatherings, at least monthly, maybe like every 2 weeks or something, like some kind of, you know, gathering around,
yes,
some practice.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know when this is going to go up, but like every 3 or 4 months, like right now I have the space set up for what I call a Tao Day, which is sort of like a community showcase. Like I know a lot of really cool people, including yourself. So sometimes I, you know, gather
like a modality showplace of what you
Yeah,
do.
It's like a it's like a TED talk.
5 minute yeah, acupuncture,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it's like a TED talk, which I think they give 15 minutes. Like I give 30 minutes to. It's usually like 5 or 6 presenters. Like it could be like the Tao of, you know, like yoga, or the Tao of breath work, or, you know, the Tao of hula, right? I have someone. So just to like create like a multi-disciplinary afternoon. So I have one August 9th, 2 to 6 p.m. It's the third one that I've done here. And usually we have like 30, 40 people that show up. And just like what's out there in the community, there's these badasses that, you know, you can connect to, and like, so that's like something I do every season. Yeah. But
awesome.
I'll probably add some more things that are more sort of my transmission, like at least monthly, like going forward, maybe starting in September, October. Yeah. Mm. So.
Perfect. So Tao Center,
DAOCENTER.com is my
yeah.
website. I also have social media. The main one that I kind of share things on is my Instagram, which is Sifu Paul Wang. Sifu is the title that my lineage conferred me in martial arts. So Sifu, and then Paul Wang, Paulwang. So if you're on Instagram, like I post you know, once or twice a week, some kind of meme or some kind of idea. So if you're, and oh, actually, and I know you have one too. I have a Substack that I occasionally share some ideas on too, and that's Daology. Yeah, D-A-O. L-O-G-Y, Daology. Yeah, you can search that on Substack. So I have, you know, maybe not as prolific as you, but I have like a dozen articles on there for now. Yeah,
hey,
when I get around.
Quality over quantity, I'm sure they're
like,
amazing.
It's like, yeah, I think I should put something out, okay, you know, like 6 weeks later, yeah. So, yeah, appreciate.
Perfect, yeah, that's this, what a wonderful service to the community. I can't wait to come back to an event here. Perfect. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We'll give the contact info and they can find you. And come on, people, let's get healthy here. You know, like the community needs it. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for your attention and your reception. And happy to support and serve anyone who feels like they might benefit from mm-hmm. some of the things that we shared. Yeah. Make the simple easy.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye for now.
Cheers. Yeah.
When I discover the truth, I want to shout it from the rooftops. That's why I wrote 3 books, Unlearning to Remember, The Flying Lyris, and Breakup is the Beginning. Available on Amazon, on my website, on Spotify, you can get the audiobook, and on Audible, you can also get the audiobook. We've been told a bunch of nonsense, a pack of lies, and they're not innocent lies like the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus or something like this. No, these are drink this poison, it's good for you kind of lies. So these people are nasty, and we need to do something different. So let's wake up together. Help me, support me in this mission to educate everyone around me. And even though my family arrogantly fights me in learning this, once we learn the truth, it's only good. It only helps. It only improves our lives. I mean, how can not taking poison and learning how to help ourselves and take care of ourselves and take care of our kids, how can that possibly harm? That can only do good. Learning how to take care of this earth and how to build community, come back together, how to steward this place. This is only good stuff. This can only help. So I wrote The Flying Lyris for the kids. It's a story about, we're told that a new boogeyman is on the scene and only the potion from the rulers can save us. Where have we heard that story? Unlearning to Remember. That was when I woke up after my first divorce and learned about community and about how this place used to be and our ancestral ways and how much better this place can be if we know how to take care of each other. And then Breakup is the Beginning. It's all about my divorces and my losses and how they truly were the beginning. Is that's what originally woke me up. It was in that desperation that I was tired and done and ready to ask for help and willing to do whatever to build a better life. And I have, and it's amazing. And so get them on my website at clayonland.com or Amazon or Audible or Spotify. Thanks so much for your support. I put everything I've learned into my courses. They're on my website. How to feel better. How to communicate better. How to relate better. If I feel better, I can do the other two. And often when people say something that upsets me or triggers me or something happens or just life in general, first thing I do is turn to feel better. Whether it's breath work or meditation or mindfulness, watching my thoughts, or doing something physical like exercise or the cold or hot or whatever it is, but a whole list of amazing tools that I had no idea, and I used to suffer a lot when I didn't have them. And then once I can calm myself, well, then I can communicate better. I can catch myself before I say something hurtful, or I can learn how to ask for what I need, or I can learn how to communicate with people around me so I'm more likely to get my needs met. And this helps immensely in all my relationships. I can be the one, I am the one who's the healthy one, who's the one that knows how to relate and relates in a healthy way. I'm not the one who's the rageaholic or the maniac who's destroying the relationship and constantly doing the toxic, dysfunctional behavior. And so if we have these skills, we can all be that one. And then this whole toxic living, toxic relating, toxic communicating can fall by the wayside because we don't have to do it anymore because we've learned a better way. And this system that we're in here, they don't want us to know a better way. They don't want us coming back together. They don't want us feeling better because then we're not going to buy their stuff. They need us poor and sick and fat and unhealthy in order to do all that. Whereas if we feel better and we're able to communicate better and relate better, we don't need them. We can build a better world where we steward and take care of this place and each other and everyone benefits, even the supposed powers that be. They will benefit by joining our communities, but we have to first say no to them and learn how to empower ourselves, reclaim our power. So I put that all into my courses. Come on my websites, Clay Schmitz and clayisland.com. Both of them, it's all there. Sign up today or come to a one-on-one person and let's get going. Let's help each other feel better, communicate better, and relate better. Thank you so much.